All right, let's dive into something really interesting. Imagine, right? You're at McDonald's, you're biting into a Big Mac, and suddenly, crush, there's something hard. Turns out, it's a sapphire.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to Joni Miller back in 1997. And this, well, this led to a huge legal battle that really shook the world of franchising.
This case, Miller v. McDonald's, is fascinating. You know, it really goes beyond just, you know, this one woman and her unfortunate meal. It raises this question: how much responsibility does a corporation, a giant like McDonald's, actually have for what happens at its franchises?
It's something that I'm sure a lot of our listeners, especially those who deal with franchise agreements, you know, think about. And this whole thing started at a McDonald's in Oregon. I mean, if you were in Joni Miller's shoes, would you have even thought about whether that McDonald's was owned by, you know, McDonald's Corporation or a franchisee?
Right.
Everything's the same. The uniforms, the menu, everything's McDonald's.
And that's where a parent agency comes in. It really boils down to this. If a restaurant looks and feels exactly like a McDonald's, is it reasonable for a customer to think they're dealing with McDonald's directly? The court had to figure out if it was reasonable for Joni Miller to believe she was dealing with McDonald's based on how the restaurant looked.
So basically, even if there's like fine print saying it's a franchise, the whole experience could still make people think McDonald's is in charge.
Yeah, it's interesting how their brand consistency might have actually worked against them.
Yeah. But there's another side to this, right? What about the relationship between McDonald's and the actual franchise owner, 3K Restaurants?
Right, exactly. And to understand that, we got to look at actual agency. Did McDonald's have enough control over what 3K was doing day to day to be held responsible for this sapphire incident? The court used what's called the right to control test.
Right to control sounds a little jargony. What does that even mean?
Well, imagine you're hiring someone to like remodel your kitchen. You tell them what you want, but they get to decide how to do it. But if you start telling them what kind of tile, what color grout, where every cabinet goes, you're exerting a lot more control. See, the right to control test works similarly in business.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. So in this case, the agreement between McDonald's and 3K Restaurants, that's what the court was looking at, right?
Exactly. That franchise agreement, it said 3K had to follow the McDonald's system. These are super specific rules for everything. I mean, everything from how they prepare food, train employees, to like the design of the restaurant, the advertising, everything. It was more than suggestions. It was like a blueprint for how to run the business.
Wow. And didn't McDonald's also like send people to check up on them to make sure they were following all these rules?
Oh yeah, they had inspectors visit regularly. And if 3K didn't follow the rules, McDonald's could even end the whole agreement. So yeah, they had a lot of control.
That's a lot of control.
And the court really focused on the fact that this control even extended to things related to food safety, which is, you know, directly related to what happened to Joni Miller.
That's a good point. But wait a minute, didn't the agreement say that 3K Restaurants was an independent contractor? Wouldn't that mean they were responsible for their own actions, not McDonald's?
Right, that's the big question here. And this is where things get really interesting. Just calling someone an independent contractor in a contract, it doesn't automatically mean a company isn't responsible. It all comes down to control. If McDonald's had significant control over how 3K ran things, that independent contractor label might not really matter.
It's almost like they wanted the best of both worlds. Tight control over the brand, but no responsibility if something goes wrong.
You could say that. But the court was looking at the reality of the situation. Now, let's think about Joni Miller for a second. She said she went to that McDonald's because she expected the same quality as any other McDonald's. She trusted the brand. And this is where things get even more complex for McDonald's, because the court said that Miller's belief was totally reasonable. McDonald's had made their brand so consistent, so identical across locations, that a regular customer wouldn't know if it was owned by the corporation or a franchisee. Their consistency, which is usually a good thing, ended up hurting them here.
So even though McDonald's won initially in the trial court, the appeals court said, whoa, hold on, this needs to go to a jury. What made them change their mind? It's a real legal thriller.
The appeals court really shook things up. They didn't just agree with the trial court. They really got into the details and found some strong arguments for sending the case to a jury.
What were those arguments? Did it have to do with that right to control and the parent agency stuff?
Oh yeah, those were definitely big parts of it. But the appeals court went even further. They agreed that McDonald's had a good argument for saying 3K Restaurants was an independent contractor, but they said that the amount of control in the agreement raised questions about how much freedom 3K actually had.
So even if the contract said one thing, the reality was different.
Yeah, exactly. The appeals court focused on specific parts of the agreement that were about more than just branding. They talked about the strict inspections, the possibility of ending the agreement, and the fact that McDonald's had a say in things directly related to food safety.
So they were basically saying you can't say someone's independent if you're the one making all the decisions.
It definitely sent a message to companies with franchises. This case made them look at how much control they really had and if that could make them responsible for things happening at the franchises.
Yeah, it makes you think about where the line is between keeping your brand consistent and potentially being held liable. It's like McDonald's thought they were safe, but the appeals court threw a curveball.
And the story doesn't end there. This case brought up these big questions about who has the power in franchise situations. Like, franchisers want to protect their brand and make sure customers have the same experience everywhere. But if they have too much control, it might not be clear legally where the franchisor ends and the franchisee begins.
It's a tough spot for companies, right? Protect the brand or loosen up to avoid lawsuits, but maybe lose some consistency?
Exactly. The Miller v. McDonald's case didn't give a simple answer. It showed how complex and tricky the franchise model is and how control and liability are always kind of fighting each other.
And in all of this, we can't forget about Joni Miller. It's easy to get caught up in the legal stuff, but this is about a woman who got hurt and wanted someone to be held accountable. The appeals court agreed that it made sense for her to think she was dealing with McDonald's because the brand is so recognizable and all the locations are so similar.
The court's decision also mattered for customers. It brought up the need for companies to be honest about their franchise relationships. Like, if a company has a lot of control over its franchisees, shouldn't they tell customers that they might not be dealing with the main company directly?
It makes you think about all those little disclaimers you see now, like on websites or receipts. This is independently owned and operated franchise. Did those come about because of cases like this one?
It's hard to know for sure, but it's possible this case really made people pay attention to the issue of whether franchisors could be held liable, and maybe that made companies rethink how they talked about their franchises.
So what happened next? Did this actually go to trial? What was the final decision? Okay, so we've talked about the Sapphire, the whole apparent agency and right to control thing, and the appeals court really changing things up. What happened after all that? Did they actually go to court?
Well, this is where things get a little unexpected. Even though the appeals court said it should go to a jury, Miller v. McDonald's never actually went to trial. They ended up settling out of court.
Oh, wow. So we'll never know what a jury would have decided.
Nope. Settlements are usually confidential, so we don't know the details of what happened between Miller and McDonald's. But even without a trial, this case had a big impact on franchising.
It's like a mystery with a missing ending. But, I mean, it still set a precedent, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a landmark case. People still talk about it, use it in legal arguments, everything. The appeals court's decision really created a framework for how we look at whether a franchisor can be held liable. It made companies rethink their franchise agreements and how they do things.
So even though there wasn't a jury, Miller v. McDonald's changed the legal landscape for franchises.
Definitely. It showed that courts are willing to look beyond just what a contract says. They want to see how much control a franchisor really has. It was a warning sign for companies to be careful about how much they control their franchisees.
It's amazing how one incident, a Sapphire in a burger, could have such a long-lasting effect. It's been decades since this happened, but it's still relevant.
That's how legal precedent works. Court decisions, especially ones that are groundbreaking, can shape things for years and years. Miller v. McDonald's really opened up a whole discussion about liability in franchising, and people are still talking about it and analyzing it.
Makes you wonder, how did this case affect other industries that use franchises?
That's a great question. The ideas of apparent agency and right to control, those apply to way more than just fast food. We've seen them used in cases about hotels, car dealerships, gyms, tons of businesses that have franchises.
So one case can set a precedent, then other courts use that in their decisions, and over time, it can change how a whole industry works.
Exactly. It shows that these cases aren't just isolated events. They're all connected, and they build on each other.
For lawyers, especially those who work with franchises, understanding Miller v. McDonald's is really important. It comes up all the time, helps figure out where the line is for franchisors' responsibility.
Yeah, definitely.
So what started as a simple story about a Sapphire and a burger turned into a deep dive into the world of franchise law. We talked about these complex legal ideas, looked at the relationship between franchisors and franchisees, and saw how much impact one court decision can have.
And I think the biggest takeaway is how important it is to think critically. Whether you're a lawyer, a business owner, or just a customer, understanding the laws behind everyday things can help you make better decisions.
That's a great point. So next time you're at your favorite franchise, think about the legal battles that have shaped how it works. It might be more complicated than you think. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We hope you learned something new. Until next time, keep asking questions and always, always read the fine print. Sell Saibe S. Shu on.